Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the February 20th, 2020 meeting of the Upper Marion Township Board of Supervisors. It is 7:37 p.m. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll begin with roll call, starting on my far right.
Greg Phillips.
Greg Wax.
Bill Genoway.
Carol Kenny.
Tony Habaday, Township Manager.
John Walco from the Solicitor's Office.
Rob Loper, Township Planner.
Leanna Calubriel, Township Engineer.
First, I'm going to ask for your indulgence this evening. I have a slight cough. I am not contagious. It is not the coronavirus. So just bear with me. I may cough in the middle of some comments. First item on the agenda are meeting minutes to be approved from January 6th reorganization, January 6th 2020 workshop, and January 16th 2020 business meeting. It's the pleasure of the board.
I'll make a motion to approve those minutes.
I'll second.
Motion by Vice Chair Kenny, second by Supervisor Garzillo to approve the minutes. Are there any questions from the board? Any questions from the public? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's 5-0. Okay, Chairman's comments. Under Chairman's comments, we had an executive session to discuss personnel and litigation issues, and we will be going before this meeting, and we will be going back after this meeting to continue those discussions. Which takes us to the first item on tonight's agenda, which is a presentation regarding the recent Kingswood apartment fire. And as I see Chief Nolan walking up there, I did want to preface this with a couple of comments. As you're all aware, there in late January, there was a devastating fire that occurred at the Kingswood Apartments on South Gulf Road. The initial dispatch reported fire, heavy smoke, and possible people trapped. While accidental in nature, the fire quickly grew, and the first arriving Upper Marion Public Safety staff encountered numerous people still in the building or trapped on balconies. I can honestly say that in my 40 years as a member of the fire companies in this township, that this was one of the top three dramatic events that we've ever experienced. Without concern for personal safety, Upper Marion Township's public safety personnel entered the hostile environment and rescued numerous people. It was amazing and shocking to Chief Nolan about how we went about learning how many people were actually rescued. And through a combination of interviews and use of body cams and use of footage gained out in other locations, they were able to determine that the people we will recognize tonight were true heroes. So, Chief Nolan, let's do it.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Genoway. As you stated, we're here tonight to recognize the heroic efforts of some of the first responders of that devastating fire. And while we're focusing on their actions, I don't want anyone to forget the actions of our outstanding volunteer firefighters and EMS members. Under the direction of Chief Rubin that night, these volunteers put forth a tremendous effort to fight the fire, preventing it from destroying the entire building and preventing it from spreading to another building. While the firefighters were stopping the fire, our EMS members, along with our regional EMS partners, were treating numerous people and transported 13 patients to area hospitals. Their actions that night showed their true professionalism. And it's because of the caliber of our fire and EMS staff that these rescuers were able to risk their lives that night to save others. They knew that if they got in trouble, some of the very best would be coming in after them. So at this time, I'll call forward the award recipients to the front of the room. Sergeant David Gershanik, Officer Susan Bednar, Paramedic Stephen Deviney, Officer Jennifer Emmerich, Firefighter William Holinsky, Dispatcher Jeffrey Hassiel, Officer Andrew Kohler, Dispatcher Shelley Contra, Officer Michael Lone, Officer Evan Mioli, Paramedic Eli Metzger, Officer Andrew Scaviccio, and Officer Nicholas Voto. And Officer Troy Nicholson, who wasn't mentioned, but thankfully came forward. All these members of public safety will be receiving a unit citation tonight, which reads, whereas on the evening of the 29th of January, 2020, The Upper Marion Township Public Safety Department was dispatched to a building fire at the Kingswood apartment complex. Initial reports indicated that there was heavy fire coming from the third floor of the apartment building. Upon arrival of the initial police officers, they reported heavy fire and smoke coming from the building and witnessed residents jumping from the balconies of their apartment and stumbling out of the front lobby door that had thick black smoke coming out of it. These residents indicated that there were still residents inside the building. Whereas members of the Upper Marion Township Public Safety Department immediately entered the apartment building that was being consumed by fire and heavy smoke and initiated life-saving rescues of the trapped residents. Whereas the police officers, firefighters, and paramedics utilized all means necessary to rescue 9 residents and assist the remainder of the residents from the building safely, preventing any loss of life. Whereas the dispatchers received and provided vital information and updates to our officers and ensured that the appropriate amount of fire and EMS apparatus were responding and kept track of all of the officers that were entering the fire building to rescue and assist our residents. Now, therefore, be it resolved that these members of the Upper Marion Township Public Safety Department be recognized for their personal initiative, dedication to duty, professional actions without regard to their own personal safety, which resulted in the prevention of a tragic event and the preservation of human life, presented this 20th day of February, 2020.
Chief?
Yes.
Did you have some other comments?
No, that's it.
A couple of comments before we close out this section. First of all, congratulations from the board on a job well done. But I have to say that night, as I arrived with the fire department, the first sights I saw were Mike Lone coming out of the back of the building and collapsing down onto the ground. And the second sight I saw was Bill Helensky grabbing a ladder, and I lost him in the smoke in the back of the building as he ran toward the building with that ladder to get a guy who I had just seen up on the second floor, if I remember right, Bill, right? Second floor that you got the ladder up to. And then the third sight that I will remember that night was Dave Gershanik, Sergeant Gershanik. He looked like he had just come after working eight hours in a coal mine. He was so blackened from the smoke on his face. But several members did have to be transported that night to the hospital for smoke inhalation, and it's great to see them all here tonight, back on duty. In fact, they're back on duty the next day, were they not, Chief?
They were. And I will also point out that resident that was saved by Firefighter Holinsky is sitting in the front row here. So happy to be here with us tonight.
So, sir, it's great to have you here tonight. Would you like to say anything?
I'd just like to say, was on the third floor.
Okay.
So, two line jump.
Well, there was a guy on the second floor and then a guy on the third floor, and I didn't know which one Billy went to, so.
I came within 30 seconds of jumping. That's how close it was. And the ladder just reached up to the third floor. That was it. So, saving my life. Thank you.
Very good. So two other quick comments about that evening and the after actions. The board would also like to thank members of the public safety team, the public safety advisory board, a group of citizens led by Karen Holler and a couple of others, and other boards and individuals who helped to create and implement the relief effort for the victims. There were some $5,000 in gift cards that were collected and distributed to the victims who requested assistance. And if you can possibly imagine losing all of your possessions, your credit cards, having no place to go, having no food, waiting on an insurance company to give you some kind of a payment to move forward, I know from personally interviewing a couple of the people that all they were looking for was just something to get them through a week until they could get back to the point where they had a place to stay, where they could get some clothing to replace what was lost, and so on. So to all of you who helped in that assessment and gathering the funds, and to all of you who gave, thank you so much on behalf of Upper Marion Township. The final thing that I wanted to mention is that the first engine, fire engine that was on the scene that night is designated as Engine 56. And I thought that this would be a good time to share with the community the changes in the delivery of fire and EMS services to further enhance our capability for you. Over the last few months, Chief Rubin and the officers of the volunteer fire companies have been working on a new response system to provide more efficient service delivery. Using the members of our three volunteer fire companies between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m., and throughout the weekend, there are four volunteers who commit to service by being in a township fire station, with an additional four members committing to respond from home for any dispatched emergencies. In addition, two fire officers are assigned each week to respond to calls and support this duty crew system. Known as Engine 56, the responding crew rotates stations, a different station each of the 4 weeks in a month, when the respond from home crew going from the other side of town, meaning one unit is always coming from south of 202 and one from north of 202. This provides a greater assurance of a timely and qualified response to fire and critical medical events. Also, over the last 3 months, over 20 volunteers have been trained to provide emergency medical services and will take their exam on February 29th, thus enhancing the provision of emergency medical services in the township. These volunteers are to be commended for doing this. This is not a five-hour class. This is hundreds of hours. First, they need to be thanked for taking on these new generation delivery systems. Second, for expanding their knowledge and skills in emergency medicine. And third, for making this commitment to Upper Marion in an era when volunteerism is waning. It's certainly not here. The Upper Marion Township Board of Supervisors is committed to keeping the volunteer fire companies in the volunteer system as long as possible, and this commitment by the volunteers suggests that the companies and members are eager to support the next generation system and are going to be around for a long time. So while we didn't have recognition for the members in the ceremony with Chief Nolan, thank you to the members of the Sweetland Fire Company, Swedesburg Fire Company, King of Prussia Fire Company for the excellent work you do in the name of public safety for Upper Marion Township. Thank you. At this point, those of you who may wish to go on and patrol the township may do so. Or if any of you care to vacate at this time, please do. Okay, the next item is a presentation by the Board of Community Assistance.
Good afternoon, Board of Supervisors. Or I guess good evening, and thank you, firefighters, and my feelings are not hurt that they all left. All right, so we're going to give our annual Board of Supervisors overview of what the Board of Community Assistance does, and then I can answer any questions that the board may have or the members at large here. So there are five members of us. There's Lydia Dan Sardinas, David Karen, Brett Montique, myself, David Zeffering, and Gina Mancino from the Valley Forge Casino and Resort. Basically, our job is to advise the Board of Supervisors on what to do with the monies that are given to us from Valley Forge Casino and how to divide them between various nonprofits and 501c3 organizations that help and benefit Upper Marion Township, as well as scholarships for our Upper Marion resident seniors in high school. Our number of applicants has gone up from our initial year in 2013 from 41. You can read the slide. The high year was 103 in 2015. Last year, we had 77 applicants. And you can see last year, we gave money out to 56 of those. When you look at the numbers year in, year out, we typically award about two-thirds of the applicants who apply for grants or scholarships at this point. The funds that we've given out have also thankfully been increasing. You can see originally there was $145,000. Last year there was $152,000 that was available. This year I'm very excited to announce there's $193,106, I think that's the correct number, that is available for disbursement to nonprofits and for scholarships for our high school seniors. So our application process. For organizations, what we're really looking for is a project description, the costs, and then some basic information about the organizations and how they're going to benefit Upper Marion. So I'll give a couple of quick examples. Last year, I think it was 2 years ago, we gave several thousand dollars to the fire departments to buy special washing machines that allow them to clean their gear after they go into buildings like Kingswood. Apparently, it's ridiculously expensive to get that stuff dry cleaned or however they specifically do it. So they asked us for a new washing machine, and we happily provided some of the funds for that. What we're specifically looking for is how the nonprofits benefit Upper Marion. Now, I do like to point out that they don't have to physically be located in Upper Marion, but they do have to benefit Upper Marion. So an example of this is the Norristown Literacy Society has asked us for grant money for the last several years. And they specifically write in their grant application, I believe it was 56 people last year, Upper Marion residents, that they taught how to read and write in our library. So while it was money that was going to the Norristown Literary Society, it was directly benefiting Upper Marion taxpayers at this point. Basically, it has to be a 501c organization, an official nonprofit, in order to get a grant at this point. Our grants come between $1,000 and $10,000, and really the amount that we're going to award is based upon the need and the quality of the grant application at that point. The more detail you give us and the more benefit you can show it, benefiting taxpayers, the higher likelihood you have of getting a grant application approved. Actually, let me go back one quick second. All nonprofits need to have a year-end report showing how they spent the money. That is very important. And one of the things we've been looking at recently is previous award winners who haven't filled in that year-end report are less likely to get that grant again moving forward. So for our high school seniors, this morning I had the pleasure of going to our high school and we gave a seminar to the seniors of what to do and how to write a good application. It was really interesting to see how their thought processes worked. And specifically what we did is, excuse me, I should have asked for the same relief as Chairman Genoway there. We showed several redacted applications of, let's say, lesser quality that did not get money previously. We showed three applications that all applied to the same nonprofit, two of which met the bare minimum that was needed to get funds and they both got a $1,000 scholarship, and then one that went above and beyond and explained the personal impact of their service, did some research with it, and they got a $3,000 grant. So to show the students, if you do the bare minimum, you will probably get the bare minimum scholarship that we offer, and if you put in a little bit of extra work, you should get a little bit of extra money at that point. And then we showed our two previous Von Steuben Award winners. That's our $10,000 scholarship that we give. These are the best applications that we read and typically have amazing grant proposals or ideas at that point. Last year's made a social media page for Miriam's Attic. The young woman realized that it was people that looked like my mother that were going in there, and there was no one in their 20s or 30s or 40s that was buying stuff from Miriam's Attic. So she created an Instagram and a Facebook page to drive traffic to Miriam's Attic, and then tied that into how they benefit Laurel House and the overall good impact that that's having. These kids really loved it today when I told them to pull out their phones and pull up their Instagram accounts. And they were looking at their counselor going, can I really look at Instagram in school? Yes, pull up Miriam's Attic, see what it's saying. That was done by a woman who we gave $10,000 to. And then they all were going, well, can I do a TikTok app? I said, I don't know what that is. So we'll see if that comes through. So our scholarship application is based off of a number of different things. Academics is one of the things. Community service, both past and future, is probably the one that we weight the hardest at that point. We want to see what they're going to be doing for our community, what service they're giving back, and that's typically is the one that we look at the most at their application. Character and leadership, we want to see that. And then colleges and universities. For all of the scholarship money that is given out, it's given directly to the colleges. It's not given to the individual students. I think we can all agree that's probably a best practice at this point. But we want to see the acceptance letter of the college. We want to see the financial aid letter from the college. There's a whole rubric of things that we're asking our students to give us at that point. They must give at least 15 hours of community service to get the $1,000 scholarship at that point. Everything must be done between June 1st of this year and December 31st, and past projects are not eligible. So I tell people, as the local scoutmaster, Eagle Scout projects are great. They don't count for this. You need to do something additional and beyond. The senior class project that you did to be able to walk out the doors of our beautiful high school, or I guess our soon-to-be beautiful high school, that doesn't count as well. It has to be a new project. And then the important one up there is confirmation at project completion. We want to make sure that this is actually being done. So we'll typically ask for a stakeholder in the community to sign off and supervise that. Ms. Kaufman has done that for numerous scholarships in the library, where she's worked with the students and made sure that they actually did what they said they were going to do. This is our rubrics that we're looking at. Extracurricular activities, special circumstances. So for example, financial aid doesn't always look at all the nitty-gritty at that point. It looks at numbers. What it might not know is maybe dad got laid off of his high-paying job and is now working a less-paying job at this point, right? That could have a big effect on financial aid that maybe didn't go through the FAFSA form. If you have seven other brothers and sisters in college and you're the youngest of eight, that would be something we'd want to know about, because that sounds like a financial hardship as well. We want to know any sort of extenuating circumstances, and we give the students a place to put that on the application. Again, the community service project plan is the most important one that we're looking at there. We want to see something unique and exciting and something that really benefits Upper Merion. Your transcripts are a requirement. They have to come with the application. A letter of recommendation. I told the students today, having a letter of recommendation to get into college is nice for this, but if you can talk to your teachers and get a letter of recommendation for the Board of Community Assistance, that showed you went a little bit extra, and you actually did it before the April 1st deadline at that point. And they also kind of looked and like, oh yeah, I guess that would show a little bit of extra. Yes, go the extra mile. It typically gets rewarded. Copy of your college acceptance letter and the financial aid, as we talked about before. Our community service hours, our minimum is 500. In my career doing this, we've only ever given out 1,000 or above. Lydia, have they ever given out 500? She says yes once. Okay. It's 15 hours minimum. The most that we give out is $10,000, and that is a sliding scale that expects 50 hours of community service there. I asked the students today, if I gave them $1,000 and they had to do 15 hours worth of community service, what that worked out to on an hourly basis. And they all looked at me and said, I'm in calculus, I can't figure that out. Which I gotta talk to Dr. Gardner at the school district and we'll get that figured out. But I said, it's very good. You know, you're getting paid for your volunteering time here. So again, everyone needs a letter from their beneficiary. So what we wanna make sure is these students are not going rogue and deciding, you know what, I think I'm gonna put really cool grass designs in Heuser Park and I'm gonna cut it myself and, you know, we'll put a giant Viking display in the middle. We probably wanna run that by Dan Russell at Parks and Rec first before we do that at that point. So we need to make sure that all the beneficiaries have signed off on that. And then last but not least, if it doesn't involve an organization, we need a responsible adult to take responsibility for it then, to make sure that it gets done. So our scholarships range, again, 500 technically is our lowest. In the last several years, it's been 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. We give out the Ronald G. Wagaman Scholarship for $5,000 and the General von Steuben Scholarship for $10,000. Now, last year, we actually gave out three Wagaman Scholarships for a total of $15,000 because we had a number of good applications and we felt we wanted to support them at that point. Where you can get your applications, and then I will open myself up for questions there. You can go to the Upper Marion Township website. You can go to any of the Upper Marion staff, the BCA members, and apparently they can ask the Board of Supervisors for applications as well. My assumption is you would tell them to go to the website, but the website is the easiest place to get it. What's not included in there is the high school counselors all have copies of the applications as well for the students, and in fact, the high school counselors have recommended that the students work with them so that they can help them polish those and get it to be a good place at that point. So I tried to make it quick because I know you guys have a full schedule. What questions can I ask or can I answer from the board?
Well, thank you for presenting that tonight. Hopefully the residents in the township will take heed and you'll get lots of applications to review. And on a personal note, thank you for that washer for the firehouse. Those are $10,000 units. You just don't go to Best Buy and buy one of these. And of course, then you have to install it. So it is a big plus. Any members of the board have any comments? Yes, Mr. Mike.
Thank you, Chairman Genoway. First, Mr. Montique, I see you here, obviously, and I see Ms. Dan Sardinas here. So I want to thank both of you for your outstanding service to the BCA, as well as the other three members who couldn't be here tonight. As both of you know, obviously, and most people watching this program know, probably, I've been supervisor liaison to the BCA since its founding, and the BCA has always done an outstanding job going through the applications, especially the last few years. It is an enormous amount of work because there's only a limited amount of money, as you said. Unfortunately, not every applicant or organization receives a grant or scholarship, and there are some very difficult choices, and applications are competing against fellow applications. So anybody who's watching tonight on behalf of any organization they're part of or student they may know, I would heed the PowerPoint presentation and Mr. Montique's words very carefully. I do want to, I guess, clarify or add one or two things.
Sure.
First and foremost, this was sort of implied, but I wanted to discuss some applications that came in past years. And it seems to me that applications that came with letters from organizations that were aware of the student's plan and that were, quote unquote, guaranteeing that the plan would be performed mm-hmm. it looked to me as if BCA members took that as a seriousness of intent that was well thought out of. And those applications were, I think, very well respected.
Absolutely. So I think the easiest way to explain it is the more time you put in, we can see that as a committee reading the applications. It is apparent to us who has filled out the application on March 30th for the April 1st deadline and who has done it in advance. The best student applications are the ones that have the transcripts. They have the letters of recommendations that say the BCA on them, and they're dated in February at that point. They have the letters from the stakeholders saying, yes, we're going to do this. And in fact, they'll show emails back and forth, you know, with a whole planning process. They'll be typed out. They have, you know, an agenda and a deadline and all these sort of wonderful thought-provoking things. Those are fantastic ones. We've also had the flip side, and I used this morning as one that didn't get funding. We had a letter from Parks and Rec saying that they were going to give a camp, which is great. You need to have that. But there was no proposal from the actual students saying what they were going to do at the camp. So it was sort of that lack of process there. Yes, they put some time into it, but there wasn't, I'm going to do it on these days, I'm going to do this, this is what my passion is. It was, here's my letter from Parks and Rec that promises that I'll do it, but we don't know what you're doing. And they got rejected.
And it also seems to me as if the BCA members tend to value volunteer projects that are occurring in or near Upper Merion Township as opposed to, say, College Park, Maryland.
Correct, yes. Although several of us do love the Terps, we are specifically looking to benefit Upper Merion Township. So projects that benefit here are going to be weighted much higher than other projects. And then the last one I'll throw out there are projects where the student is taking the initiative. So we've frequently declined ones where they say, I'm going on a mission trip with my church and we're going to be doing lots of service out there, but I'm just showing up and I'll do whatever they tell me to do. While that's wonderful and admirable, we're looking for the students to do something on their own and create their own project.
Okay. My next comment is, and this was certainly implied, but I want to be really clear, is that two factors that are also considered is financial need and also, you said circumstances, special circumstances, or yep. I would say obstacles overcome. That's certainly played a role in what I've seen from BCA members in evaluating applications.
Absolutely. We do look at the financial circumstances. How can we help? How can we leverage this limited amount of funds to do the most amount of benefits at that point? And then maybe who are the students who aren't being helped in other places? What can we do to rectify that?
And lastly, in the slide presentation, it mentioned for higher education, it mentioned colleges and universities. Yep. I just want to be clear that people who are going on to technical school or, you know, they are eligible as well.
That counts as well. It just has to be an accredited institution.
Okay. Thank you for your outstanding presentation.
Thank you.
Mr. Montague, thank you very much for this effort that I know there's a lot of time that goes into reviewing the applications, and you put a lot of time and effort into that. So thank you to you and the committee for doing that. A question that I had is, are private schools that it's a resident of Upper Merion but attend a private school also eligible to apply for the BCA grant?
Supervisor Grazillo, yes. The answer is as long as a senior has residence in Upper Merion Township, they are eligible for the scholarship. There have been questions in the past of whether people are residents or not, and specifically what we do is we pull the tax records of their address of record and see where they pay their township taxes. And if it says Upper Merion and they are a high school senior, they are eligible.
They qualify. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, it's an important one. Is it on there? I've skipped a whole, forgive me, I thought I was done. Let me go for two more seconds here. We are going to announce this on April 16th at the Board of Supervisors meeting, assuming that we can read all the applications quickly. If we can't, it'll be at the May meeting at that point. Forgive me, I thought I was done here. And then the deadline, thank you, Lydia, is 5:00 sharp at April 1st here. So the township office will be open. It has to be received in the township office by April 1st at 5:00, okay? So it is a very hard deadline. Please don't be late. Thank you.
I got your back on this. You did say students filled it out on March the 30th.
I said
that
several
times. It was due the next day. Yeah, I got you on that one. You did say it.
Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks very much, Brent.
Chair Genoway, if I can just add one
sure.
last thing. Considering how thorough and comprehensive this presentation was, and we do have the upcoming April 1 deadline, can we get our friends at UMGA TV to turn this into a snippet that can be put on our website and aired on UMGA TV. So everybody will have a lot of clarity and a complete comprehensive overview, especially if you're a high school senior, as to what is expected, what is required, the rules and regulations, so on and so forth.
Okay, that takes us to the consent agenda. And there are 9 items on the consent agenda. The first item is to reject the bids and authorize for rebidding for ADA improvements at Bob White and Sweetland Parks. This is due to all of the bids being received were over budget. And as a result, we need to wait a little while and then rebid it. Item number 2, awarding of bids regarding the community center roof. General construction to Detweiler Roofing of East Earl, PA, in the amount of $216,000. And a roof repair to Detweiler Roofing of East Earl, PA, in the amount of $847,000. And all of these funds are covered by a grant. Item 3, resolution 2020-4, authorization to sign a PennDOT traffic signal permit application for modification for the South Henderson Road and Solon Boulevard intersection. You may recall a number of months back, a new plan was approved that will put a fast food restaurant and another commercial property just to the south side of South Henderson Road on the in the area of Solon Boulevard, and this will now create that linkage at that point. Item number 4, resolution 2020-5, TCDI grant application regarding the Moore Irwin property master site plan feasibility study for pedestrian connections to the business park and potential uses, and the business improvement district will apply for this. Also, we have resolution 2020-6, Montgomery County 2040 implementation grant application for the First Avenue Linear Park Phase 2, $200,000. Mr. Hamaday, this also will be through the bid?
It will, yes, Mr.
Chairman. Okay, thank you. Item 6, authorized capital equipment purchase for a replacement equipment trailer for UMGA TV in the amount of $7,797. Excuse me, this is covered by an insurance vehicle accident claim. Item number 7, approve the agreement with Reading Hospital regarding an EMS student clinical training program. This is where, students at Reading Hospital will be essentially riding on our ambulances in Upper Marion Township to help with their educational process and at the same time become accustomed to, or our personnel being accustomed to, new techniques being used in emergency medicine. This is a great partnership. Item 8, authorize improvement escrow release request number 2, final payment for Target in the amount of $1,268,129.21. And their reviews that were provided to the board indicate compliance with all issues on the plan. And item number 9 is an appointment to the Historical Commission of Sarah Seipel. Pleasure of the board.
Move to accept the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Motion by Supervisor Phillips, second by Supervisor Garzillo to accept the consent agenda. Any comments from the members of the board?
I have one comment, Mr. Yes. Chairman. I just wanted to mention something about the community center roof project. As Chair Genoway did correctly state, we do have a grant for that. And I would expect a significant amount of information to come from the township in the coming months about the details of that project. Thank you.
Absolutely. Any questions from the public? Seeing none, in that case, may I have a motion, or may I have those who wish to accept the consent agenda say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. It takes us to item C, the Malvern School Development Plan, 880 Mansell Mill Road, demolition of an existing office building, construction of a two-story, 10,750-square-foot daycare center on 2.41 acres in the SM1 district with an expiration date 2020. That's tonight.
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Loper.
Thank you. I believe everybody is quite familiar with Mansell Mill Road. We've looked at several things on Mansell Mill over the years. And if you look at the aerial, this is the existing site. There is an existing building on the property, which will be demolished. The building is approximately 10,000 square feet. And then a new building slightly larger, will be built behind where this building is located, which will be operated by the Malvern School as a daycare and preschool center. The difference being that typically we think of daycare as one where the children are dropped off in the morning and picked up in the afternoon on the way home from work. A lot of the preschool activities are actually for a set period of time and not necessarily for a whole day. As part of this application, the applicant did submit to the Zoning Hearing Board for a special exception and did obtain an approval with conditions to build the daycare center. Essentially, that is a use that is permitted in all of our zoning districts as a special exception. The site plan shows the new building, which will be built towards the rear of the property with the parking in the front. This was done to provide better circulation so that there is a one-way circulation around in and out. One thing that people must also remember is that with these facilities, the parents are not allowed to drop the children off and have them come in. They actually have to escort the children in and out of the facility. So the facility will be two stories, and it will cover various age groups. And then there will also be playground areas around the outside of the building. Those will be fenced. Those will be secure for the appropriate type of activities for the children in the school. The applicant will be building a retaining wall adjacent to the Davis property. And that is because the current building is actually serving the same as a retaining wall. The current building is actually built into the slope of the ground. There will be stormwater management, and I will point out that there's actually a reduction in the impervious for the site. The paving is being reduced by about 5,000. The total reduction in impervious is about 10,000 square feet. One of the items that was discussed at the Planning Commission was the issue of sidewalks. It's always an issue that we are trying to improve pedestrian connections within the township. And the solution was to recommend a partial waiver for both sidewalks and curbing. We do know that there is a project underway with the authority, the Transportation Authority, for the reconstruction of Route 23 in that area to get the old bridge and the curve. There also will be work done on Mansell Mill Road with other development activity that's taking place up at the top of the road. So I believe the recommendation is sensible that rather than have them put in improvements that are very likely to have to be removed, to rather have a condition that those improvements will be put in at the appropriate time and that the easements will be provided. The applicant will have agreements with both of the authorities concerning their necessary impacts. And the applicant's present this evening. I know that there's been discussion back and forth with Mr. Davis, who is the immediate neighbor. There are conditions on the plan regarding concerns that were raised by Mr. Davis. There's also a lease of land from the authority for a portion of the site, as well as a give back for a easement in favor of the authority on the property. Mr. Scandone from Malvern is here, and Mr. Pizanka is his attorney if you have any questions.
Thank you, Rob. Any questions from the board?
I only have one, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pizanka, is your, now that The property along West Valley Forge Road is for sale. Is there any consideration by your client to purchase that?
We didn't realize it was for sale, not the alignment, but something.
Okay. So that little keystone area, which has a house and a garage on it, is now currently for sale. There's a for sale sign on it.
I'll speak to my client. We can get back to it.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
And I have one question. Mr. Loper, when you were mentioning about the future sidewalks and curbs that we put in place after future projects are done, is there any, will there be any guarantee established that will make sure that that happens, some kind of escrow or contractual agreement, or what will be set in place to ensure that happens?
It's actually a condition that's included in the resolution under waivers and deferrals. And it provides for a deferral to not provide sidewalk on the condition that the applicant or property owner at the appropriate time install them within 1 year of a request by the township. Note to be added to the plan, same concerning the curb. So it will be part of the recorded document of approval of the plan.
Recap, all the reviews have been done, and I know you touched on all of them in some way, shape, or form, but all the reviews have now come in, and there are commitments either that
correct.
They will comply with all of those or they have already
correct.
Corrected them. Okay. Any other questions?
One question, one comment. I think it's important to mention that we did see this plan in workshop a few months ago. So the board has had a previous opportunity to review it, as has the Planning Commission, as per your comments. Assuming approval, what is the construction timeline? I guess that's my question.
Well, the demolition permit will be applied for, I think, next week. And I think, Joe, they anticipate construction by the next fall.
Thank you. Anything else from members of the board? Mr. Davis.
James Davis, 820 Mansell Mill Road. I just have a statement I'd like to read. I would like to thank the Board of Supervisors and the Zoning Hearing Board for their consideration, courtesy, and cooperation during Malvern School's land development plan process. As a 40-year resident and commercial property owner, I'm grateful that our board members helped me maintain the integrity of my on-site septic systems. It is also important that the trees in the agreed-upon 10-foot setback areas not be removed or cut down to prevent slope erosion on my property. Regarding the demolition of the existing 20,000-square-foot building on the applicant's property, the building is 20 feet away from my building. The building construction is block, stone, and stucco. There will be a great deal of dust, dirt, and particulate in the air as the building is being demolished. I have read the township's demolition permit requirements and have found that there is no requirement to use water from an on-site truck or other source to wet down the building and debris as it is demolished. This would provide some protection to my building and would help to control the amount of dust and dirt in the air during demolition. Otherwise, the township's demolition permit requirements and permit do not provide any safeguards or protections for me and my building. I most certainly expect the applicant and his contractors to honor the plans, the agreed upon 10-foot property line setback, and my property. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Mr. Brzonka, with regard to the demolition activities, is your client willing to take necessary precautions to manage the development of any dust and debris?
Yes, he will. Yes, sir.
How would we document that, Mr. Walco?
Well, I think that at this point, would you be agreeable to make that a condition of the demolition permit at a later time?
I'd have to speak to my client about that. We're certainly willing to comply with all the township requirements as required by the demolition permit.
John, The land development agreement generally includes language concerning control of dust, dirt, and other things during construction, does it not?
It does, but that would generally be to the standards that are set up through the code. I think if this board is looking for a specific requirement to be made during the demolition process that is above and beyond what is otherwise required by the code, that would be something that, again, it would need to be agreed upon and then put in the demolition permit, as it wouldn't be a land development itself.
I think the difference that I hear is proximity to the existing structure. Most of the time when we're tearing the building down, there's nothing adjacent to it or within close proximity. But 10 feet away is, or 20 feet away, Mr. Davis? 20 feet away.
Would your client be amenable to taking precautions that are recommended by the township for the portions of the buildings that are close to his property?
Sir.
And I'm not looking for anything extraordinary, just common best practices to manage this.
Yes, sir, we agree.
So then it's a matter then, I think, that the staff internally will make sure that the permit and the code enforcement officers are aware of that issue, and we can make sure that that's followed up on at the time of application.
Okay. Mr. Davis, that work? Okay.
If I may, maybe it also makes sense going forward for future applications if we change the code by one or two lines to allow the township to require some type of water spreading procedure to tamp down on dust or particulates.
I think that would be a again, not a zoning or a land development issue, but it is something that we could address in our codes.
Yep.
And actually update the applications for the permit, demolition permits to require that as well.
If it's in the building code, though, we're not going to be able to do it locally. Yeah. So we're going to have to rely on that being a land development issue. But I think you're right. I think language has to be built in going forward.
So essentially what we would be able to do is we could work language into any future land development agreements to specify exactly what the desires of the board are when it comes to the control of the property during the demolition and the development process. So that's something that we could do internally, and I'll work on that with the land development agreement. And I'm sure Mr. Pozanka and I can agree upon language in this project to specify certain controls that will be made that will address everyone's appropriately.
Right. But there are criteria in the BOCA code or the ICC, right, for construction.
I'm assuming that those are being followed right now, whether or not they would address.
No, but I guess my point is that we could probably take those and at least make sure that they're in our permit applications for demolition. Demolition is generally not something that, while it's addressed by the code, it's not addressed in detail by any of the building codes. So we may want to actually do something a little bit more than just put it in our land development documents, which, you know, frankly, you know, get recorded and that's it. So
is it, you'd be referring to making an amendment to our ordinance for the building code, our building code ordinance?
Well, I think at the very least we can put that language into our permit standards for demolition.
So, and we certainly would be able to do that.
Okay.
One more question, if I may. How long is the demolition period going to take? Is it a day long? Is it several days? Is it more than a week? Over how much period of time would it take to demolish the current building?
Mr. Scandone, do you know the answer to that?
In 2 weeks or less, approximately?
I wouldn't want to commit to something specific like that.
Right.
We don't really know until we start
the process. Okay. All right. I'm just trying to get a sense of how much time we're talking that special circumstances would have to take place. Okay.
One thing that could also be done is to, again, if he's willing to, is to notify the adjacent neighbor prior to the building starting coming down. Obtaining the permit is one thing. Actually tearing it down is another, to make sure that he's aware you know, when that is actually going to happen.
Yes, we've been in frequent communication with Mr. Davis, so we'll follow up on that.
Okay. Anything else? Anything else from the public? Okay. So this is in a position to vote on a resolution, correct?
That is correct, with the two deferrals, as explained by the township planner.
Okay. Any other questions on that? Okay, then can I have a motion on the resolution?
I'll move to approve the resolution.
I'll second the motion to approve.
Motion by Mr. Phillips, second by Mrs. Kenny to adopt the resolution. Are there any other questions? Any questions from the public? All in favor of adopting resolution 2020-7, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you. Evening.
Thank you. I want to go back. When I discussed the consent agenda, I asked for an acceptance. We want to go back and approve them. So move
for approval.
Second it.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Any questions from the board? Questions from the public? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's 5-0 acceptance. Takes us to item D, the Church Road Bridge Replacement Project Update, Ownership and Maintenance. Mr. Hamaday.
Thank you, Mr. Genoway. I just wanted to provide the board and the public just a quick update on the project and to discuss an issue that has come up with regard to ownership and maintenance of the project. Very quickly, the Transportation Authority is very close to turning this project over to PennDOT for bidding. One of the issues that has arisen is the responsibility, the ownership and responsibility of the bridge once construction is completed. Now, I'm going to take you back in time to 2004 when this project started, and at that point, the Transportation Authority, signed an agreement with PennDOT for reimbursement of costs for the project. In that application, the Transportation Authority was designated itself owner and of the bridge. That's, you know, what had happened. In 2019, an agreement was reached with SEPTA for the same thing, reimbursement. In that agreement with SEPTA, Transportation Authority designated itself or was designated as owner. Well, the Transportation Authority didn't own the bridge, won't own the bridge, and won't maintain it after the project's done. That means that the township who owns the road, who owns the bridge, who's always maintained it, will need to be designated owner and will require maintenance. PennDOT, in its ultimate wisdom, has asked the Transportation Authority and the township to enter into a transfer agreement where, rather than redo all the prior agreements, the township will now accept ownership and maintenance of the bridge once everything's complete. So the easiest thing to do would be to do that, for the board to enter into a transfer agreement with the Transportation Authority to accept and the bridge owner and maintain it once PennDOT has completed construction of the bridge. While I wasn't, you know, planning on the board, just providing an update to the board and asking the board to take any action, you know, the sooner that's done, the sooner the Transportation Authority can complete all its agreements. So if there's any, you know, consensus of the board to approve either the transfer agreement with the Sewer Authority or a resolution that the solicitor's office has prepared to accept or allow the chairman to sign that agreement, it could speed up the process rather than wait another month.
And just let me just say to the board, as liaison to the Transportation Authority, this project has been going on since 2004. We every month that we meet, we get this close, and there's always another issue to be tackled. It has not been an easy process. Dealing with some of the other agencies has not been an easy process. But they are getting very, very close, and now this has cropped up. So I'll make a motion that we authorize the chairman to sign a resolution prepared by the solicitor's office to enter into a transfer agreement with the Transportation Authority in order to be able to streamline this process. It's just a
it'll just be a faster process, and if we can cut off another 30 days before something else crops up, then that's something that we really should be doing. This bridge, frankly, and there's been a lot of tongue-in-cheek kind of discussion about it, but this bridge is about ready to fall down. And you know, even though we're going to be we're going to be inconvenienced, especially for folks who live in Hughes Park and that area, the alternative is not good, which is not to have a bridge because it falls on a septic drain. So it's important for us to kind of move this project along and see if we can't drag it across the finish line so that we get a new bridge. And as I understand it, we've always owned the bridge to begin with.
Yeah, we have. And any resolution that the board would approve would be 2020-8, authorizing okay. that.
So we have a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Well, in view of the fact that I would really love to see things move along and cut a little bit of the red tape, I'd happily second that motion.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to have solicitor prepare a resolution for the chair's signature to document the ownership and to move this process along a little bit faster. Are there any questions from the board?
So the resolution actually is prepared at this time, and it does two things. One, it is a formal acknowledgement of the township's ownership and maintenance pursuant to the terms of the soon-to-be-finalized agreement, which will be reviewed by the solicitor's office. And second, once that agreement is finalized, provide Chairman Genoway the opportunity to sign it, again, speeding up the process and not have to wait for the next meeting. So it's a very simple resolution.
Okay. So we have a motion. Any other questions from the board? Anything from the public? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Okay, that takes us to accounts payable and payrolls.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Wax, second by Supervisor Garzillo to pay accounts payable and payrolls. Any questions from the board? Questions from the public? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Additional comments? Additional business? Who would like to start?
You can start.
Ladies first. I have a couple things to mention. I want to do a reminder about the winter farmers market that's continuing in the township building. The next winter market will be on February 29th. And I wanted to let residents know that there is now a food truck that comes to every winter market. The excellent selections from there. So come have your lunch. There's also a vendor that's internal inside the building that offers grilled sandwiches that she makes on site. So there's now food offerings at our winter market, which is a new addition. So please come out and have lunch with us at the winter market. Again, the next one is February 29th. I wanted to make a couple extra comments about the Kingswood apartment fire that happened on January 29th. 42 residents were displaced, and every single one of the residents was found, all temporary living situations, but I was amazed at how quickly everyone responded. I was there that evening, and I just stood back and witnessed, it was almost magical, that the public safety team just jumped in, did their thing, and it was a tremendous effort by all. So I wanted to offer my personal congratulations to all of them for their award tonight and for their diligence and hard work that they provide for our township, and we're safe and in good hands because of them. I wanted to mention that King of Prussia Restaurant Week is coming up, and it's our sixth annual restaurant week. It will be March 9th through the 15th, and I have a list of the restaurants. I'll just run through them quickly. They're all a prefix menu set at either $15 or $20 for lunch or $30 or $40 for dinner. The restaurant list is Fogo de Chao, Eddie V's, Paladar, Bahama Breeze, The Melting Pot, Morton's, Legal Seafood, Sullivan Steakhouse, Founding Farmers, Seasons 52, North Italia, Capital Grill, True Food Kitchen, City Works, Creed Seafood and Steaks, The Pub by Wegmans, Valley Tavern at the Valley Forge Casino, and Revolution Chop House. So I hope everyone has an opportunity to go out and enjoy some of these restaurants at reasonable prices, and maybe it's restaurants that you haven't been able to visit before, and it gives you the opportunity to sample the fare at a reduced price. And all proceeds will benefit Children's Hospital in King of Prussia, their specialty care unit, so it's for a worthy cause as well. And the last thing I want to mention is we're coming up on daylight savings time, so everyone change your clocks. March 8th is daylight savings time. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Kenny?
Thank you. I just have one item this evening. It's to announce that we're going to be having a March Madness Beef and Beer Upper Marion Foundation fundraiser. That'll be on Sunday, March 22nd from 2 to 5 p.m. at Screwballs. It's all you can eat and drink, roast beef sandwiches and draft beers. There'll be raffles and a silent auction and door prizes. The tickets will be $25 in advance or $30 at the door. You can purchase the tickets in advance at the township, and you'll be seeing more about this everywhere. So please join us to help us increase the coffers of the Upper Marion Foundation, and the foundation itself was involved in helping the residents at the Kingswood fire as well. So I'd like to also add my thanks to Supervisor Garzillo and her husband, who also helped in collecting donations, the gift cards, for the people who were victims of the fire. And a thank you as well to everyone, to the volunteers, to the volunteer firefighters, to all of our emergency responders who just made us all so proud. And obviously, one resident who was extremely grateful to us, who was here earlier this evening, who was rescued. So thank you to everyone. Great job.
Thank you. Mr. Wax?
Vice Chair Kenny stole my thunder. It was not the first time, and it will not be the last. But I do want to add a little bit more about what the Upper Marion Township Foundation does. Vice Chair Kenny did correctly mention that they were involved in the raising of approximately $5,000 to help victims of the Kingswood fire. Also, in the past few months alone, they were the first organization to sponsor a shelf at the Upper Marion Community Cupboard, and the foundation also made a significant contribution recently to help out the Upper Marion Area School District social workers with any type of emergency needs they may have. Besides the beef and beer, you can also purchase a Upper Marion Township Foundation or Upper Marion Township beer stein. They're $35. All proceeds go to benefit the foundation. You can get them at the Upper Marion Community Center. I believe you can also get them at the Public Information Office here at the Township Building. And that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wax. Mr. Phillips?
I only have two things. First is to, again, give my thanks to our first responders. The award ceremony tonight is well-deserved, and they do a lot of good work. But the other, second thing is to thank our public works staff, who was working diligently on Route 202 and the sinkhole that opened up there that actually took out our sewer line. So they have been working diligently, and thanks to them. And we've really got a great crew to be able to do these and handle these kind of incidents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. And I just want to add a little bit on to what Mrs. Garzillo said regarding Restaurant Week. It is March the 9th to the 15th. I already have my reservations for each night for dinner, so I'm set. If you didn't make your reservations yet, you better hurry up because they're going fast. It's actually over 40 restaurants this year. Mr. Wax and I had the opportunity to be at the kickoff event that was held at Eddie's V's, and many of the restaurant owners were there and took note. We also had a great presentation by a family who is a patient at CHOP Specialty Care Center here in King of Prussia, and told their story of the value that that facility has brought to them. So it's quite moving. We also had a representative, the nursing manager was also there, and it was a pretty interesting session that was provided to kick off KOP Restaurant Week. So if you have an interest, go to koprestaurantweek.com, and you will see the restaurants, both fast, casual, and fine dining. And also, this year, excuse me, it's KOP Shops for CHOP. There are a number of retail establishments that are also offering the same benefits or the same funding to CHOP if you buy in their stores. And you can get more of this on KOP Restaurant Week. And I believe the high school also is having a special event. Do you, Mr. Weiss, do you remember what they were doing?
I think it's some type of pajama party or something like that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't guarantee my words there as being absolutely correct, but it was something along those lines, I think.
I think you're right, and I think if you contributed something, you could wear pajamas or some dress-down type of thing. And I think some businesses have the same opportunity.
Yeah, I think businesses this year have the opportunity to raise money on their own. I don't have all the details, but if you go to the King of Prussia District's Restaurant Week page, you can Google that, find it very easily. There'll be a lot of information on there if your business is interested in raising money to help CHOP here in Upper Marion Township.
Thank you. Anything else from the board? Anything from the public this evening? Seeing no one, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
We stand adjourned at 8:45 p.m. Thank you.